So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, Text 27, all the way up to these verse, which is text number 6 of the 12th chapter. So I'll just read the translations, there's quite a number of verses to go through. The title of the chapter is Lord Ramachandra Rules the World. Okay, text 27. The palaces, the palace gates, the assembly houses, the platforms for meeting places, the temples, and all such places were decorated with golden water pots and bedecked with various types of flags. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, auspicious welcome gates were constructed, with banana trees and betel nut trees, full of flowers and fruits. The gates were decorated with various flags made of colorful cloth and with tapestries, mirrors, and garlands. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, the people approached him with paraphernalia of worship and begged the Lord's blessings. O Lord, they said, as you rescued the earth from the bottom of the sea in your incarnation as a boar, may you now maintain it. Thus we beg your blessings. Thereafter, not having seen the Lord for a long time, the citizens, both men and women, being very eager to see him, left their homes and got up on the roofs of the palaces, being incompletely satiated with seeing the face of the lotus-eyed Lord Ramachandra, they showered flowers upon him. Thereafter, Lord Ramachandra entered the palace of his forefathers. Within the palace were various treasures and valuable wardrobes. The sitting places on the two sides of the entrance door were made of coral. The yards were surrounded by pillars of Vaidurya Mani. The floor was made of highly polished Markata Mani, and the foundation was made of marble. The entire palace was decorated with flags and garlands and bedecked with valuable stones, shining with a celestial effulgence. The palace was fully decorated with pearls and surrounded by lamps and incense. The men and women within the palace all resembled demigods and were decorated with various ornaments, which seemed beautiful because of being placed on their bodies. Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, chief of the best learned scholars, resided in that palace with his pleasure potency, Mother Sita, and enjoyed complete peace. Without transgressing the religious principles, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by devotees in meditation, enjoyed with all the paraphernalia of transcendental pleasure for as long as needed. And in the next chapter, chapter 12, entitled The Dynasty of Kusha, the Son of Lord Ramachandra. Here's the summary. This chapter describes the dynasty of Kusha, the son of Lord Ramachandra. The members of this dynasty are descendants of Shashada, the son of Maharaj Ikshvaku. Following in the genealogical table of Lord Ramachandra's dynasty, Kusha, the Lord's son, was followed consecutively by Atiti, Nishadha, Nabha, Pundarika, Kshemadhanva, Devanika, Aniha, Pariyatra, Balastala, Rajanabha, Sagana, and Vidriti. These personalities ruled the world. From Vidriti came Hiranyanabha, who later became the disciple of Jaimini and propounded the system of mystic yoga in which Yajnavalkya was initiated. Following in this dynasty were Pushpa, Dhruvasandhi, Sudarshana, Agnivarna, Shikara, and Maru. Maru attained full perfection in the practice of yoga, and he still lives in the village of Kalapa. At the end of this age of Kali, he will revive the dynasty of the sun god. Next in the dynasty were Prasushruta, Sandi, Amarshana, Mahasvan, Vishwabahu, Prasenajit, Takshaka, and Brihadbala, who were later killed by Abhimanyu. Shukadev Goswami said that these were all kings who had passed away. The future descendants of Brihadbala will be Brihadrana, Urukriya, Vatsavrida, Prativyoma, Panu, Divaka, Sahadev, Briyadashva, Panuman, Pratikashva, Supratika, Marudeva, Sunakshatra, Pushpakara, Antariksha, Sutapa, Amitrajit, Brihadraja, Barhi, Kritanjana, Rananjaya, Sanjaya, Shakya, Sudoda, Langala, Prasenajit, Kshudradraka, Ranaka, Surata, and Sumitra. All of them will become kings one after another. Sumitra, coming in this age of Kali, will be the last king in the Ikshvaku dynasty. After him, the dynasty will be extinguished. Key text number one. Sugadeva Goswami said, the son of Ramachandra was Kusha, the son of Kusha was Atiti, the son of Atiti was Nishadha, and the son of Nishadha was Nabha. The son of Nabha was Pundarika, and from Pundarika came a son named Kshemadanva. The son of Kshema, it's the next text. The son of Kshemadanva was Devanika. Devanika's son was Aniha. Aniha's son was Pariyatra, and Pariyatra's son was Balastala. The son of Balastala was Vajranabha, who was said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god. Next text. The son of Brajanabha was Sagana, and his son was Vidriti. The son of Vidriti was Hiranyanabha, who became a disciple of Jaimini and became a great acharya of mystic yoga. It is from Hiranyanabha that the great saint Yajnavalkya learned the highly elevated system of mystic yoga known as Adhyatma Yoga, which can loosen the knots of material attachment in the heart. The son of Hiranyanabha was Pushpa, the son of Pushpa was Dhruvasandhi, the son of Dhruvasandhi was Sudarshana, whose son was Agnivarna. The son of Agnivarna was named Shigra, and his son was Maru. On today's verse. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Having achieved perfection in the power of mystic yoga, Maru still lives in a place known as Kalapagram. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son. At least 5,000 years ago, Srila Shukadev Goswami ascertained the existence of Maru in Kalapagram and said that Maru, having achieved a yoga siddha body, would continue to exist until the end of Kali Yuga, which is calculated to continue for 432,000 years. Such is the perfection of mystic power. By controlling the breath, the perfect yogi can continue his life for as long as he likes. Sometimes we hear from the Vedic literature that some personalities from the Vedic age, such as Vyasadeva and Ashvatthama, are still living. Here we understand that Maru is also still living. We are sometimes surprised that a mortal body can live for such a long time. The explanation of this longevity is given by the word yoga siddha. If one becomes perfect in the practice of yoga, he can live as long as he likes. The demonstration of some trifling yoga siddha does not constitute perfection. Here is a factual example of perfection. A yoga siddha can live as long as he likes. So savasti yoga siddhah kalapagrama mastitaha kalerante suryavangsham nashtam bhava yata punaha. Having achieved perfection in the power of mystic yoga, Maru still lives in a place known as Kalapagram. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vansha Kalpatrupyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So our thanks to the organizers, giving us an opportunity to speak. Try and do my best. Please give me your blessings. sometimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are long lists of dynasties, one name after another. Now we can consider that Shukadev Goswami was speaking for 7 days. So one may wonder, why would we go through all these lists of names? What does it mean for us? Actually, the Bhagavatam, because it operates on many levels, we cannot really understand the depth of the Bhagavatam. So maybe from the intellectual platform it looks like simply a list of names, but actually in the 11th canto it said, Shabda Brahma Sudurbodham Pranendriya Manomayam. The meaning is that Shabda Brahma, or spiritual sound, it is operating on the prana, the life air, indriya, the senses, and mana, the mind. In the purport, well actually it's a purport from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that even the chakras, they are affected by Shabda Brahma. So when we read the Bhagavatam, maybe we're reading it from the intellectual platform, but actually there's something else going on. It's very mystical. This purification is going on. Now in spiritual traditions, some followers, they like to concentrate on the mystical aspect. Now in the Hare Krishna movement, the mystical aspect is already there, but we just don't focus on it. It's there in the form of Shabda Brahma. It's there in the Hare Krishna mantra. So there's so much mysticism in Hare Krishna practice. But because as devotees, we're not interested in it, because actually it's antithetical to pure bhakti, therefore we just don't talk about it. But Yoga Siddha, today's purport is all about Yoga Siddha. So actually it's understood that when one controls the senses, then one can attain Yoga Siddha. So to control the senses, it's not very easy. But actually, through the Hare Krishna process, it is very easy. For example, in the 11th canto, it said, Jitam Sarvam Jitirasi. When the tongue is controlled, all the senses are controlled. The tongue is very difficult to control. We may try and control the other senses, but if the tongue is not controlled, it's considered that one has not controlled any of the senses. So how do we control the tongue? What is the system for controlling the tongue? Chanting the holy name, yes. Rupa Goswami, he says, Cheta Prangana Sangami Vijayati Sarvendriyanam Kritim. When the holy name is dancing in the courtyard of the heart, then all the senses are defeated. So chanting Hare Krishna, that's how we control the tongue. And how else do we control the tongue? Krishna Prasad, yes. The tongue is the most voracious of the senses. So we control it through Krishna Prasad. Also, Prabodhananda Sarasvati says, Dur dantendriya sarpakala patale pratkata dangstrayate. For the devotee of the Lord, who has received the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, for him the senses are like the broken fangs of the serpent. So they have no power. So this is actually how one controls the senses. And Srila Prabhupada explains that unless one has controlled the senses, there's no question of Yoga Siddha. Now here, in today's purport, Prabhupada is making a point of what is real Yoga Siddha, and that is having a long duration of life. Now sometimes when Prabhupada, he would go on his morning walk, there would be joggers in the park. So he would comment, they're actually decreasing their duration of life, because they're breathing more. It's understood we have so many breaths. So through Yoga Siddha, one can slow down the breathing, one can even stop the breathing, and then one can live indefinitely. This is kind of how it works. So Prabhupada is mentioning that this is actually real Yoga Siddha. And he compares it to the trifling, uses the word, trifling Yoga Siddha. So what is he referring to? What other siddhas do we know of other than increasing the duration of life? There are 8 mystic siddhis. What are these 8? Anima, Mahima, Prapti. What is the English for that? Anima, what does that mean? Becoming very small. Okay, yes, very good. Mahima, very big, right? Easy. And what was the next one you said? Prapti. So what does that mean? Okay, yes, attaining things. And that's 3, there's 5 more. Yes. Laghima, yes. Laghima means being light. Yes, controlling others. There's one that is called Ishitva, which means controlling others. There's another one called Vashitva, which means controlling another person's mind. Kamavasayita, yes, which is? Yes, it's considered to be the chief of the eight cities, because there's another one, the last one is Prakamya, and which means to attain what one desires. And Kamavasayita means the same thing. But in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada explains the difference. He says Kamavasayita is a more powerful city because you can even break the laws of nature, whereas Prakamya, you're operating within the laws of nature. So these are the eight cities. Now there's an interesting statement in the Bhagavatam. Na yoga siddha apunar bhavamva. It means, I do not desire yoga siddha, and I do not even desire liberation. Now it's a phrase that appears in three different verses. Vritrasura, he gives this verse. The Nagapatnis, they also give the verse, and Krishna gives it to Uddhava. And all those three verses, they're roughly the same meaning. They mean that we do not desire heavenly planets, we do not desire liberation, we do not desire sovereignty over the earth. All we desire is to remain as your devotee. We do not even desire yoga siddha or liberation. So this is actually a very similar verse. This verse and the other, all three of them, they actually appear in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Now in the Nectar of Devotion, there's a chapter called Devotional Service Surpasses All Liberation. So the Sanskrit term for that is Moksha Laguta Krit. It's one of the six symptoms of devotional service. So because we practice this devotional service, we ultimately come to the platform where we don't care about anything like yoga siddha or lording it over the material universe. Actually, it said, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate Vidimahendra Dishta Kittayate, that when one is a devotee of the Lord, then the whole universe becomes very joyful, and Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva become comparable to insects. You know, you maybe think this is the ultimate position in this material planet, but for one who has received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, that position is just like being an insect. It's insignificant. So all these verses, they indicate ultimately that yoga siddha is an anartha, or it's unwanted. Naturally, Krishna tells Uddhava, he says, kala kshapana, that the hetu, kala kshapana hetu, the yoga siddhas are simply a waste of time. And then in the Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's a statement, bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi hridivartati. The desire for material enjoyment and the desire for liberation, they're like a witch in the heart. And bhakti will not awaken unless we conquer this witch, which we do through devotional service. So bhukti means enjoyment. That is actually one of the aspects of enjoyment is yoga siddha. So what is the key verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? There's one verse, it's called the Paribhasa Sutra. Jiva Goswami explains that Paribhasa Sutras, they're the key verses of a text, and all other verses in that text are to be understood in relation to that verse. So there's one particular verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu which is the key verse. Yes, so the idea is here, pure devotional service means it is devoid of all other material desires, and it is devoid of the desire for karma and gyan, and it is favorably performed for Krishna. That's roughly how it goes. I can't remember the exact translation. So in this text, karma gyanad, gyana karma janavritam, it means it's not covered by gyan and karma. So gyan in this context means impersonal gyan, like the Mayavad gyan. It doesn't mean devotional knowledge. Karma means, well, it means material enjoyment, but it also means yoga siddha, because the term adi is used. Adi means other things as well. So yoga siddha, it is one of the things that we must reject. Our bhakti must never be covered by this desire. Now, fortunately, because it's the age of Kali, we don't see these yoga siddhas very often. Therefore, it's beyond our reach. But other things like the desire for wealth, that is more likely to be what's stopping the devotee from making spiritual advancement. But actually, yoga siddhas, you know, they're there. There's some stories. Just recently, a devotee called Mano Rupa, she, you may have been following on the internet, she was ill and she left her body recently in Mayapur. And it's interesting that our husband was explaining that shortly before she left, she said she wanted darshan. Now, our husband thought, well, it's not possible, the curtains are closed. Now, she fell asleep. She was very weak. She fell asleep. When she woke up, she was eager to say something. So she spoke to her husband. She said, I've been given a gift. I can become very, very small. And I can go to the altar and I can hide under a flower at the feet of Lord Nityananda. And I can watch the kirtan going on. So her husband explains that as a woman, she never made up stories. She's a very serious woman. So he said, are you dreaming this? She said, no, it's real. Now the next day, a devotee came up to her husband and said, I had a really strange dream. I dreamt that your wife became very, very small. She was so small, she was on my lap. So her husband said, what, she became like a baby? He said, no, she had the same form, but she just shrunk. So he took this as confirmation that she had this anima siddhi. It's a possibility. Another example, lagima siddhi. You know, Srila Prabhupada, according to reports, he had this lagima siddhi as well. Sangsaduta, he recalls that one time Prabhupada told him, he said, these yogis, they have this lagima siddhi. They can walk on sunbeams and they can enter the sun planet. And then Prabhupada said, I know this because I experimented. When I was in Hamburg, I experimented doing this. It's amazing. Now, that's just one. Maybe it's not true. Maybe it was one person. How do we know it's true? There's another example. This is our memory from Satyanarayan Prabhu. He explains that he'd never met Prabhupada. And he was expecting great things when he met Prabhupada. And it was even better than he expected. It was at Detroit Airport. And Prabhupada was coming up the escalator. And when he reached the top of the escalator, instead of walking off the escalator, Prabhupada just kept floating up into the air. And then he floated along, and he had this big effulgent light, and he just descended onto the Vyasasan. Now, for many years, Satyanarayan thought he was the only person that witnessed this. But then he discovered that Indrajumna Maharaj and Sureshwar Prabhu also had the same vision. So it's confirmed by three different people. So this is Lagima City. I mean, we can talk about other cities, Vashitva. Remember when, who was it now? Rupa Vilas Prabhu, he was giving class. He explained at one time, and Chandramouli Swami was in the audience at the time. This was about 2 years ago. He was explaining how once he was about to give a Bhagavad Gita class, and then he felt a tap on his shoulder. And he looked around, there was no one there. Then he felt another tap on his shoulder. And then he saw Tripurari at a distance, and he was going like this. So he just kind of went into a trance, and he handed the Bhagavad Gita to Tripurari. And when he spoke that, Chandramouli Swami in the class, he put his hand up and he said, the same thing happened to me. So this is like some little control going on here. So this would be, what would it be called? Vashitva, maybe? Controlling the mind? Or maybe it's Prapti, tapping on the shoulder. Prabhupada gives examples of Prapti, like a yogi, he can touch the moon. So he makes the joke about how it's so difficult for the scientists to go to the moon, but a yogi can just reach out and touch. And he also gave a story about a yogi. Someone asked him for a pomegranate from Afghanistan. They're really nice, by the way. My mother went to Afghanistan. The pomegranates are really nice there. So this yogi, he just reached out. We didn't see him. They didn't see him do it, but he just, next thing you know, there's a pomegranate in the next room from Afghanistan. So this is called Prapti Siddhi. Another example is Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni's been chased by the Suras and Chakra. He can go anywhere and everywhere. He can go to the planet Lord Brahma, planet of Lord Shiva. You can even go to the planet of Lord Vishnu in this material universe. You can't go to the one in the spiritual universe. So this Prabhupada calls this Prapti Siddhi, because it's like acquisition. You can go anywhere you like. But we see that even though Durvasa Muni had this power, he was actually disturbed. Because it said, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. Whether one has all the enjoyment, liberation, or Siddhi Kami, when one desires any of these things, then one is Ashanta. So this is the lesson to be learned from the Durvasa Muni pastime. He's actually, even though he has so much power, he could take a hair from his body and create a demon, throw it on the ground and create a demon. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. So in spite of all those powers, it said, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta, that the devotee of Krishna, he is free from desires, therefore he is peaceful. That is the ultimate lesson to be learned. Therefore, we don't discuss so much Yoga Siddhis. As in, for example, today, it took us several minutes to even work out what they were. So Prakamya, to get one what one desires. Well, Krishna has all these siddhis, right? He's known as Yogeshvara. Yogeshvara means the master of all mystics. So all these siddhis Krishna has. Anima, how is he smaller than the smallest? And antarasta paramanu chiantarastam. He can enter even into the atom. Mahima, all the universes are contained within him. Prapti, well, he obviously possesses everything because everything's within him. It's already within his body. Prakamya, Kamavasayata, he can attain whatever he desires. Vashitva, I was thinking when he plays his flute, everyone becomes bewildered. So he knows how to control the minds of everyone. So he has all these potencies to the maximum degree. So in comparison to him, Prabhupada, he derides the so-called God-men, these yogis who claim to be God. They manifest a little city and then they bewilder the foolish people. Actually, he says, there's one purport, he talks about this, he doesn't give a name, but in a conversation he actually says Maharishi Yogi. He said he had Vashitva, this power to control. So he would control people, the Westerners, they would be controlled by him, and they'd give money and he'd leave. This is how Prabhupada described it. So Prabhupada, he would downplay this Yoga Siddha. And when asked, reporters asked, what can you do? He said, look at my disciples. They're all chanting Hare Krishna. That is the city. That is the real amazing thing that's happened. So ultimately, this is our aspect, our attitude towards Yoga Siddha. In the purport, it's also mentioned how the Yoga Siddha of increasing the duration of life, this is the best one. So in the second canto, it says, Tarava kim na jivante, bastra kim na sasanchida, akadante na mehante, krim grame pashavo pari. Do the trees not breathe? Do the trees not live? Do the bellows not breathe? Do the village animals not eat and pass semen? So this verse, the meaning is that, well, you may think it's nice to have a long duration of life, but actually the tree, which is a very low species, lives a lot longer, can live thousands of years. And you may think, well, I can breathe. You know, the tree doesn't breathe. Well, the bellows breathe. And you think, well, I can eat. I can enjoy sex life. Well, the animals do that too. So Shukadeva Goswami, he's defeating the materialistic mentality and pointing out that actually we don't actually have much power when it comes to duration of life. We're even defeated by the tree. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, he gives two examples of very important personalities, very influential, powerful personalities who had a short duration of life. Which ones? Does anyone know who he mentions? Who? No, Katvanga Maharaj. He was famous for becoming self-realized in a very short duration of life, a short moment of time, but his duration of life wasn't so small as far as I know. Yes, Shankaracharya, who lived to the age of 32, and Lord Chaitanya, who lived to the age of 48. So what was the year of the departure of Lord Chaitanya? Gopakumar, was it 4? Was it 15? What? 36? 1534. And he was born 1486. What does that work out as? 48. What were you telling me yesterday? That you said 46, it works out. Okay. Anyway, so the duration of life, Lord Chaitanya, 48 years. Well, I'm 44 now, so only 4 more years to go. And then I've reached the same age as Lord Chaitanya. And Shankaracharya, amazing. He took sannyas at such a young age as well, right? So we see that it doesn't matter. There's actually another statement. Kim pramatasya bahubi parokshaya hayanariha varam muhurtam viritam gatate shriyase yataha. That better than a long duration of life is a moment of real consciousness, because by that one can begin the process of self-realization. So we're only really interested in something, that spiritual moment which can begin our spiritual life. And I personally think, when I look at the way Srila Prabhupada was spreading Krishna consciousness, he asked his disciples to do things which were very dangerous sometimes. They would go to difficult places, difficult countries, where there was a lot of risk involved. For me, I look at that, I see it. He didn't see protection as necessarily on the bodily platform. You know, when Krishna tells Arjuna, Nami Bhakta Pranashyati, my devotee never perishes. What does he mean? He doesn't mean necessarily the material body. You know, the guru may give a difficult task to the disciple. Disciples may be killed in trying to spread Krishna consciousness. But ultimately, Nami Bhakta Pranashyati means the spiritual life of the devotee never perishes. So we can consider these things. I mean, sometimes in the Hare Krishna movement, we maybe think, oh, it's difficult to surrender. But when you consider some of the things that Prabhupada expected of his disciples, they were a lot difficult, a lot harder. And devotees that have been in the movement for a short space of time, Prabhupada would send them off by themselves sometimes, start a center. You know, how do you do that after being in the movement for a few months? You know, it's very difficult. But this is what's required. And Prabhupada was glorious because he got so much out of his disciples, and they did it out of love for him. You know, off to Russia, behind the red. Imagine, that's very dangerous, you know, in disguise. They were going behind the Iron Curtain, spreading Krishna consciousness. And they're very wonderful stories. I remember Devan Ridaswami describing how in Poland, this was during the Cold War, the devotees, suddenly this big truck arrived with all the books for distributing. And the devotees, they were unloading the truck and they were all crying. Imagine, they were just so happy to have the chance to distribute these books. And in Russia, they didn't have the printing press, so the books were being copied, you know, like in the days of Lord Chaitanya when he went to the Adikejava temple, he copied out the Brahma Sangita. So in Russia, they were actually taking a copy, copying it themselves, and then handing it on to someone else like this. This is very dangerous, very glorious, and devotees were in prison and things like that. So we can understand that ultimately, Nami Bhakta Pranashyati means the spiritual life of the devotee is protected. And whatever risks we take for Krishna, we should understand that he will protect us spiritually. Hare Krishna. So we've got 5 minutes left. Anyone have any comments or questions?